Basketball fans, welcome to We The Raps Cast, coming at you on Dash Radio. You can find us on Dash at 4 p.m. Eastern every Tuesday and in podcast form on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and anywhere else you get podcasts in your ear holes. I'm Dan Grant at Slam and Danny G, and with me, as always, is a man who lives his life like there's no tomorrow. All he's got, he had to steal. It's at Rusty Pedal Bike, Russell Pedal. But wait, there's more. We're running with the devil, and for the first time, we have a guest. Justin Rowan at, I'm going to say this wrong probably, Cavs Nada on Twitter. Say that
Cavs,
for me, Justin.
It looks great in writing, and practically it's just terrible. I guess it's Cavs Anada.
Okay. That's what I was going to say, because it's a play on Canada, right?
Oh, that makes sense. Right. That makes
sense. Come on, Dan.
Sorry, I'm rusty. Okay, well, Justin's here to help us terrify ourselves and Raptors fans everywhere with a deep look at the offensive juggernaut that is the defending NBA champion Cleveland Cavaliers. Justin, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Great. Yeah, thanks so much for being here. And I think it's going to be, you're our first guest ever on the podcast. This is our 12th episode, and you're the first one.
Way to set the bar low. Set the bar very, very low. I'm still going to trip over it and probably scuff up my elbow or something. But you know what? It's all your guests from here on in are just going to, or here on out, there's me being a bad guest already. But it can only progressively get better from this point on.
Great. Well, you know, baby steps is always a good way to start. Game one, we're recording this for the listeners out there. This is a little bit different for us too, because we're going to release this short, podcast in podcast form on Sunday, or it's late Sunday night, probably early Monday. And then the second part of the podcast, which is on our Dash Radio show, will be released on Monday after we're going to record a post game one. And then those two shows will be combined. So if you're listening to this on Dash Radio on Tuesday, this is going to be a bit of a series preview, and then we'll have a game one reaction, and that'll all be kind of Wayne's World time machine melded together. So stick with us. And if you're looking for a game one reaction, if you know what happened in the game, you can skip ahead kind of to the middle if you like, or do whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Justin, what I want to know is, so you live in Winnipeg, is that correct?
This is true.
Yeah. How did you become a Cleveland Cavaliers fan?
Just one of those teams that ended up getting some of the games in the area. A lot of what we get, like for football, we'll get Bears games, got Bulls games up here too. Mm-hmm. But I was just always looking for players to kind of emulate. Even though I'm only 6'2", I still was kind of forced to play center and power forward in high school. So I was looking at players to emulate. I ended up liking Carlos Boozer a lot, although that was before high school came around. But it was just a player that I kind of caught my eye on. And, they drafted LeBron. He eventually left. And after he left, actually, it was funny, that's when I became even more dedicated Cavs fan and started writing for Fear the Sword and flying out to Cleveland for games. So it's a bit of a weird journey, but last year was certainly the highlight of that journey.
Yeah. I mean, coming back from 3-1, winning the title that way, it must be pretty amazing as a fan of the team.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Cool. Russ, do you have anything you want to ask Justin about?
You asked the main question I wanted to know, is how in the world someone from Winnipeg ended up becoming a Cavs fan, so I'm glad to have that answered. I guess
in a lot of ways, Winnipeg's kind of Cleveland North, and that's always been the main thing. Just like Curse Sports City, very similar fan base mentality. It was very easy to relate to a city that was more prominent than it is now and kind of gets a bad rap. So there was a lot of things that I could kind of relate to just beyond the players on the court.
Yeah, right, for sure. Right. I haven't been to Winnipeg since I was 10, but the last thing I remember was that the mosquitoes the size of like B-52s just hitting the windshield of the car at like, it felt like a hailstorm.
People either remember the cold or the mosquitoes. It depends what time of year.
Yeah, it was summer, so there you go. So, all right, so one thing that we're going to do here, I got quite a few listener questions, which is pretty cool, and I kind of want to get your conflicting takes on them, just to kind of set up the series. Obviously, it's a rematch of the conference finals from a year ago, and this Raptors team is deeper and some say better suited to take on the Cavs now than they were in the series last year went six games, but it wasn't really that competitive, I think, if we're being honest. Toronto managed to steal a couple games, but that was kind of before Cleveland put their foot on the gas. So this first question is for Russ, and then Justin, I'm going to want you to follow up. Andrew Pace asks, obviously, about those additions that Toronto's made this year, Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker. Russ, how do you see those two affecting this specific matchup against Cleveland?
Well, I mean, first of all, I guess Ibaka is the biggest acquisition there, obviously. So I think how he matches up in this is going to be very interesting for me, because especially on the defensive end, when it comes to him guarding, like if he, where he's matching up with either Thompson, I don't know if he's going to guard Thompson or Love, but either he's like, I'm hoping that he'll be matched up on Thompson, but then you have to go like, well, where are you going to put Valanciunas? I think that's the biggest question for me. The biggest question for me is like, how are they going to use him? Because if he's going to be, has to be on Love, then he's going to get dragged out of the paint where he's most useful. So I don't know. I'm hoping Ibaka won't spend too much time defending around the perimeter, but I have a feeling that's what's going to happen here. So that's kind of how I feel like they're going to take him out of it a bit.
Yeah. I feel like if he's defending on the perimeter, he's not going to be in the game.
So that's got me kind of worried, like that they could mute his effectiveness a bit in this series.
Fair. But, Justin, I was just going to say, how did the additions of Ibaka and Tucker, do they worry you at all? Are they giving the Raptors a different look?
I take the Raptors as a much more serious threat as a result of those. I think when you look at what this Raptors team has compared to Raptors teams in the past, it's defensive versatility. Mm-hmm. The Raptors were always a deep team. It just wasn't deep in meaningful ways in this matchup against the Cavs. Like, they had a lot of guys that could do similar things, but now you have multiple players coming off the bench that can defend multiple positions. They can switch. There's a lot of different looks that Dwayne Casey can go out and roll out. But in the past, it always felt like the players coming off the bench didn't really change the style of this team. And I think we saw in that Milwaukee series that the Raptors were versatile. They were able to change the way that they played to better combat Milwaukee and ended up winning the series as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really great point. Their ability to kind of guard and switching, I think, like you said, is huge. It's something that a lot of Toronto's bench players in the past, like Biombo, Biombo could switch on defense, but he's so limited offensively. And then, you know, Terrence Ross could shoot, but he couldn't really defend that well. And the guys were like really one dimensional, whereas Ibaka and Tucker specifically are really, really well-rounded players.
Right.
They can play on both ends of the floor, and I think that's why they've been such a big addition to the team. Okay, so this is a question that, Justin, I want your perspective. We've talked about this a lot on the podcast, and I want your perspective as an outsider. Another Justin James, asks, why do the Raptors as a fan base, Raptors fans, want to fire Dwayne Casey, even though he's the most successful coach that we've ever had? So as an outsider looking in, Justin, what are your opinions of Dwayne Casey and his coaching staff?
I have two kind of answers there.
Okay.
One, I think teams or fans, their knee-jerk reaction is to always fire the coach, because that's an easier solution than admitting that there's issues with the roster, that there's deficiencies there that prevent the team from being a contender. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I really do feel like Dwayne Casey deserves the bulk of the credit for this team overachieving in the past. I think he has to get a lot of the credit for the Raptors developing the way that they had. He's got them to this point. Mm-hmm. I do start to question now if he's the coach for the next step of that. I don't think him, if he were to get fired this summer, for example, I don't think it's necessarily an indictment on the job that he's done in the past. Mm-hmm. But I do think game to game, there are deficiencies in his in the way he coaches. I think he's slow to make adjustments. He can be a stubborn coach at times. And I don't, even if I see the game-to-game adjustments, it doesn't necessarily happen as quickly as you'd like. And the in-game adjustments just simply aren't there. There's also the possibility that the team has kind of tuned out his message. There were a lot of players that took a big step back defensively this year, and it really took those additions to kind of turn the direction of this team around.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Russ, do you want to chime in on that at all?
I mean, you made some great points. I'm like pro Casey to a fault, and I think that as much as I agree that You know, there are definitely times, and we've talked about this before, Dan, on the show, that, you know, the in-game adjustments are typically lacking, and that's where I have a problem. Like, game to game, I find some of the, although, as Justin mentioned, he's a bit stubborn, and it takes a bit longer than you'd like how long it took him to start Patterson last year.
Or start Norm against the Bucks.
Yeah, like those types of things. They take a while, but, you know, I definitely don't think there's much threat of him losing his job now. I think, like, them making it past that first round, like losing to Cleveland, as long as it's a semi-competitive series, I'd say his job is safe. So, but as for the original question as to why people look at, like, you know, Casey's really seems to be the root of all evil for some segments of the fan base. And, I don't know. I don't see it. I really don't. Like, usually when a team, like, coughs up, watching the team cough up the 25-point lead the other night, I didn't necessarily look at Casey as a big, like, Casey wasn't on the floor defending anyone or anything like that. Like, there's a certain extent to which I think he takes a lot of the blame for just, like, the players not competing hard enough in given situations. And I just think overall, if you look at the overall record over his time coaching the team and the improvements every single year and always having an above, like, a good offensive team, and, you know, most years, although, like, you worry about the defense, like, he's, most of the years that he's been coaching, they've had an above average defensive team. And I don't know. I still what Justin mentioned about maybe tuning him out. That's the only concern I have. When anyone's coaching a team long enough and you know, you're tired of hearing the same motivational speeches, or you're like, I get. So if there were ever a reason to change the coach, it might be if it gets to that point where it's obvious that the players aren't responding to him anymore, that's the only reason I would ever get rid of him.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off and jump in. I wouldn't have a problem with keeping Casey around. Like, to me, if the Raptors were to make some big additions this summer, if they were to really shake up this roster and they're at the point of truly contending, where they have a roster on par with the Warriors and Cavaliers, I could see maybe making a coaching change. But as it currently stands, I mean, you could have Popovich and Red Auerbach on the bench, and I don't necessarily think that they would have a much better chance at beating the Warriors, who right now are the favorites to win the championship by a pretty wide margin. I don't know necessarily if that would even put them over the Cavs. I don't believe so. I don't think coaching necessarily has held them back in beating teams. I just think at times it's reduced their margin for error.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think the point you made earlier about fans jumping to fire the coach being easy, I think, is, you know, an easy change, easier change than admitting your roster is flawed is a big thing as well. I think that's absolutely true. It's the knee-jerk kind of easy reaction. And I think it's a symptom of fans, you know, making that last step, like you said, the next part of the journey, because that's the hardest part. There's a lot of coaches that have gotten to the second round or even the conference finals. There's not very many, in the grand scheme of things, NBA coaches that have won a title or even made the finals. So I understand why people want to maybe move on, but I don't think... Often you see people saying, well, that's Casey's fault. Fire Casey. Casey's brutal. Imagine the Raptors with a good coach. They don't usually offer a solution. You know, Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, Red Auerbach, like you said, those people are not available. Yeah. So, you know what I mean?
And even Steve Kerr, like, Warriors fans blame him for losing the finals last year.
But... Yeah. Yeah. And look at the job he's done. I think he's the highest winning percentage of all time. He must be the 3 years.
He has, coach, yeah, there. Absolutely. He does. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, if that's not good enough, then, you know, what chance does a guy like Dwayne Casey have? but yeah, I think he's done overall, he's done a great job, but
he's a top 10 coach, right? Like, I think we can agree on that.
He's got to be. So, he's got to be right now. And I think it's interesting with the Raptors D League team having won the title, and Jerry Stackhouse, well, I think he won coach of the year, and having it kind of a ready-made replacement there would be really interesting. He's going to get some interest from some teams this summer. So if something happened where Casey wasn't brought back, that would be an interesting guy to look at. But if you're trying to push, you know, a veteran roster, like Justin mentioned, if they're trying to, you know, really go for it, do you want a rookie head coach, or are you looking for someone with experience? And I don't know how many experienced guys are out there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, so this is a big one. This I want to kind of hear from both of you. It's going to be a little bit different for each of you. Jeff McLeod asks, who the most important Raptors players are in this series, specifically beyond Lowry and DeRozan? But I want to tweak that a little bit. So, Russ, I am going to want you to answer Jeff's question. And then, Justin, if you could follow up and tell us who the most important Cavs role players will be kind of beyond their big three. So, sure. Russ, if you could go first, and then Justin, follow up.
Yeah, I'd really like to see what Valanciunas can do in this series, honestly, because he was kind of muted in the last series because of the matchup. But I think in this series a little bit more because of Tristan Thompson, there's going to be a reason to put him in the game more. And like last year, of course, he had that injury and he only played in two games of the conference finals and played very little time. I'd like to see if he could be a factor. I think that's not going to be necessarily a place where the Raptors want to rely on based on recent returns. But I'd be interested to see if he can give some interesting looks, even if he, I'm curious to see if Casey's going to go back to starting him, if he'll continue to come off the bench, because that was really matchup-based, that switch, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I mean, I think the big question mark here is Norman Powell, because he did very little in last year's conference finals after having, making a big impact in previous series, and then he didn't do much against the Cavs, didn't get on the floor much. And then same thing again this season. He had two DNPs, I believe, and then, played in games because other people were injured, like Carroll and DeRozan missed because of injury. Mm-hmm. Or in the case of the last game of the season, because of, rest/injury. And, given when all teams are at full strength, I'm curious if he can give, a bit of a different look.
Valanciunas is really interesting to me, because if I'm the Cavs, I just, if you're playing Kevin Love at the five or doing whatever, I don't think he's going to be able to stick on the floor very long.
No, not at all. But when they have the front court of Love and Thompson, I think you could get away with it then.
Well, and that's the thing. You could use him situationally like they did in the Bucks series, where they just matched him. You put him in every time Monroe was on the floor. And if you do the same thing with Thompson, maybe that can work. Thompson's a different player than Monroe. But,
absolutely. And then one last person I'll mention is not like I'm naming every player other than DeRozan and Lowry, but I think the big thing here too is who plays LeBron. There's this concept of who's teams trying to find LeBron stoppers. There's no such thing really as a LeBron stopper. So
this
constant hunt for that seems kind of silly, but at least to make things a bit more challenging on him, Carroll, when they signed Carroll in the first place, that was kind of the idea. It's someone to defend LeBron. It's well, that didn't work out. It's okay, well, now we got Tucker. That's a guy to defend LeBron. It's now LeBron's still going to get his. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But I'm curious to see if, how much importance they put on that concept of Tucker being, supposedly brought in to check LeBron. I mean, I'm curious to see what the starting lineup's going to be for game one and going forward, how they're going to match up. Will Valanciunas get back in? Beyond that, will they put Tucker in the starting lineup to start on LeBron from the jump, or will they rely on Carroll to give him? I'm sure they're going to throw all kinds of people at him, and that's going to be one of the most interesting storylines of the series. But at the end of the day, he's still going to put up ridiculous numbers, and I think they have to worry more about stopping guys like Kyrie and Love. Especially Love, because Love had a really good season against the Raptors, and he didn't have a very good conference finals against them last year, but he had a very good season this year, and although he shot poorly, he was putting up 20, he averaged 20, basically 20 and 12 or something against the Raps. So, mm-hmm. I think most of my, what I'm looking at in this series in terms of Raptors role players is going to be what they bring on defense. I think that the offense will go fine through DeRozan and Lowry, and obviously I'm sure we'll talk about this at length. I'm not that worried about the Cavs defensively, and I'm not a big believer in that switch. We can talk about that a little later, but I don't know which players on this team are suddenly going to become all defensive players. Beyond the obvious. So I'm sure that'll come up in a question, or we'll talk about that a little later. But that's just my thought.
Yeah, for sure. So, Justin, you want to go and let us know about the two Cavs? Two or three, you can pick a few. Who are the most important Cavs players outside their big three?
Well, I mean, Tristan Thompson is the obvious answer. Mm-hmm. It's in the regular season this year, Thompson easily won that matchup against Valanciunas. Mm-hmm. With Thompson on the floor, Valanciunas shot about 38%, while Thompson shot 85%. Wow. And it's not just about Thompson's ability to score in the pick and roll, which Valanciunas can't defend well. He also moves well off ball, which we know Jonas falls asleep off ball. He's a good post defender, but he's not always the most attentive. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be interesting because I don't think it's going to play out the same way because if we're assuming Jonas and Ibaka start together, I'd assume that Tristan Thompson would be covering Serge Ibaka while Love plays up against Jonas. So that'll be a very interesting matchup and how Thompson does in limiting Ibaka, mm-hmm. I think is going to impact the Raptors' offense because we've seen in the past, to make up for the lack of individual defenders that the Cavs have, they'll trap Lowry, they'll trap DeRozan, and force them to give up the ball, and mm-hmm. force guys like Damari Carroll, PJ Tucker, or their bigs to make decisions. So if you have them funneling the ball towards Ibaka, and then you have Thompson guarding him, how that matchup kind of shakes out is going to be very important. And then I guess if we're talking about other X factors outside of the big three, J.R. Smith is going to be a big one. He's been battling a hamstring injury, so his mobility had been a little bit limited. In the regular season, Smith had done a very good job on DeRozan. Mm-hmm. I don't know necessarily if that's going to be an indicator of future success. The thing with DeRozan is even when his shot's struggling, he's still going to get his because of his ability to get to the line. Mm-hmm. But in the regular season, DeRozan shot 37.5% with JR on the court and 46.5% with him off. So he's done a good job in the past. But as I said, with them funneling the ball out of Lowry's hands, that's going to put an increased load on JR. And how he responds to guarding DeRozan, whether or not he gets baited into fouling him, which DeRozan's so talented at doing, mm-hmm. I think is going to have a big impact on the series.
Definitely. I think that's, yeah, a really good choice because slowing down DeRozan is going to be absolutely key for the Cavaliers. I mean, you can't, he's another one. You're not going to stop him totally, but making it hard for him, trapping him, like you said, the Bucks did that really effectively early in their series and just made him make the pass. And he's gotten better at that. That used to be a way to shut him down completely. He wasn't really very good at passing out of double teams and didn't make good decisions.
Right.
But he's better at handling the ball now. He's really good at making that first pass. He doesn't try to make the skip passes that he used to, kind of really aggressive, dangerous passes that led to turnovers. He makes smarter decisions. But if Smith can do a good job on him, that's going to be a really big thing for the Cavaliers, I think.
Russ, yeah, especially because they're going to let DeRozan score.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
totally. I think their primary objective is going to be get the ball out of Lowry's hands. They're not going to double DeRozan. They want to make things tough for him, but they want him to be a scorer. They want him to shoot jump shots, prevent him from getting to the paint, but mm-hmm. settle for those mid-rangers. I think they would easily let DeRozan score 35 points per game if it meant shutting down the rest of the team.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think Lowry as well, he's only been back 10 games since his surgery. And right. it's funny, his first game back, he led the team in scoring, and it was a comeback win over the Pistons, and he looked great. But he hasn't been scoring a ton. And, you know, that Bucks matchup is tough. He mentioned in a post-game kind of quote after the first game, it felt like every time he was going in the paint that every player had four arms. So there's a lot of difficulty getting to the rim against a team with the length that the Bucks have. But his shot has just been kind of okay, and it wasn't even actually that great during the whole Milwaukee series. It'll be interesting to see if he can kind of get it going with his shot, because before the injury, he was shooting, you know, close to 45% from three on 7 attempts a game, and that was a huge part of the Raptors' offense. Russ, yeah. what do you think about? Do you think Lowry's going to be able to get it going? Have you seen any, you know, happy good signs of that? Or
yeah,
what are you thinking?
Like he was kind of quiet in the last round, but I don't necessarily think he was I think he'll be fine. I think that, you know, I don't see anyone the thing with against the Cavs is, you know, their guards are not particularly good defenders. And it's a good opportunity for Lauer to really get it going, I think, like more so than like facing guys like Brogdon, right?
Yeah, so. Brogdon and Dellavedova and Middleton, yeah. Just a lot of guys, right? All those dudes on the Bucks are so pesky, and
like the length really really flustered them, and I don't think that'll be as big of a problem here.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so here's what I want now. I want series predictions. Justin, you can go first, and then Russ, you can go, and then I'll go at the end.
Okay. I think it's going to be a much closer series than it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go with the Cavs in five. I think they're going to be tightly contested games and a much better series. But with the question still kind of around Lowry, he and Ibaka really haven't figured out how to play with one another. Mm-hmm. Ibaka's really struggled since Lowry's come back, and Lowry isn't exactly lighting the world on fire either. So I just think there's too many questions there. Ultimately, it's going to come down to which version of these teams shows up, because both teams are capable of looking like the best team in the conference, and both teams are capable of looking like crap on any given play.
Yeah, it's true. That's fair. Okay, Russ, what do you think?
I agree with Justin on it being a closer series than last year. Honestly, I like coming into the playoffs, I really legitimately thought that the Raptors, if any Raptors team is going to beat this Cavs team, I think it could be this one. Like, I feel like the versatility that Justin mentioned earlier, like defensively and having so many combo players, like guys that can play both forward positions or that can play the five as a stretch five, like guys like Patterson and Ibaka. And there's just so many different options that I feel like it could really give the Cavs trouble on defense. And, you know, as much as I look at you can't help but look and say, okay, the one team has LeBron James, so therefore they just basically have the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, the gap between these two teams is much smaller than it was last year. And I like the things that were exposed in the Milwaukee series make me honestly believe that, you know, I don't think any longer that they're going to beat this Cavs team. Like I had myself convinced that it could definitely happen. Mm-hmm. I've definitely eased off on that. however, I do feel like now that the slates are clean, like yes, the Milwaukee series made the Raptors look really bad at times. But I think now clean slate, these two teams, the way that they're built, you know, all things being equal, everyone's like relatively healthy as any team is this time of the year. You know, once you put all the chips on the table, I think the Raptors have a chance to at least push Cleveland. I don't think they're necessarily going to win the series, but I think that I will say that I think that the Cavs will have more of a challenge here in this round than they will with whoever they face in the conference finals. So
I agree. This is the conference finals.
Essentially, yeah. So that's just how the seeding played out. So I think that, you know, Raptors team well built. It's going to be a good series. I think it'll go I'm even going to go so far as to say I think I could see it going seven. But wow. I think that ultimately Cleveland will win, especially if you're talking about game seven at home in Cleveland and just the Raptors don't have the mental fortitude to kind of close that kind of game out on the road. But I think that they just have so many different options, and like something can happen. Like I think the Cavs are going to have trouble with guys like Ibaka. Like if Ibaka's on and the shot is on, you know, guarding him around the perimeter. And I think that, you know, as I said earlier, with the lack of defensive ability on the guards, and of course Raptors guard play is its strongest suit. So I don't know. I really think that the Raptors can stretch this series out and ugly it up a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair. So you're going to say Raptors in seven, Russ?
Yeah, no, I'm going to say Cavs in seven.
Oh, Cavs in seven. Yeah, sorry. No, I didn't mean to put words in your mouth. You're not going totally off the deep end. Yeah.
Yeah, no, Cavs I think seven. And that's still being optimistic and maybe partially because I'm biased, but I like, you know, most people won't even think that the Raptors can push them that far based on what they saw from the Milwaukee series. But I think just these two teams, you know, put up against each other, if it weren't for my preconceptions of the Raptors and my preconceptions of the Cavaliers, if we really took a very objective look at this series, I think that the Raptors can hang with the Cavs.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm going to say Cavaliers in six. I would love it to go seven because I think that would show, you know, that they would push the Raptors group kind of has taken that next step, even though it's a round earlier than a year ago. Like Justin said, this is the conference finals. So that doesn't really matter to me so much that they'd be out a round earlier, but you want to see that you can take a swing at your best opponent and improve on what you did a year ago. So I think, yeah, Cavs in six, I think, is fair. I think Toronto is going to win a home game, and hopefully they can, if they have any chance at it, they'll have to steal one of these first two. But yeah, I think Cavs in six.
Game one would probably be the most. I think game one's probably one of the biggest chances for an upset. Like, I think if it goes six games, they're probably going to win one in four. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Cavs have been off for about 8 days now. There's going to be some rust, especially if the Raptors do play kind of some of their smaller lineups. Mm-hmm. I think the Cavs are going to be prone to turnovers, and that's somewhere where the Raptors can really expose them. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at the regular season, at least when this team is healthy, they were one of the better half-court defenses in the league, but they were historically bad in transition defense. So I think if the Raptors are going to have any chance, they're going to have to push the pace, because once you get into half court, then you start getting into those team defensive schemes that I mentioned earlier, with trying to force the ball out of Lowry's hands and make it less about those individual matchups.
Yeah, I think that's interesting too, because I think in the Milwaukee series, you saw Toronto really didn't – they kind of just abandoned offensive rebounding altogether. And they didn't really get out in transition at all, which was weird. But because they've been a pretty good offensive rebounding team since the Ibaka and Tucker came in, and they kind of remade the team sort of midseason. So it'll be interesting to see if they do that, especially with the way Love can throw those outlet passes. If they want to just cede the ball to him, I don't think you can kind of give up on it the way they did in the Milwaukee series, because the Raptors are going to want to get out in transition as well. You want to obviously stop the Cavs from doing it, but the transition game, I think, for both teams could make a really big difference to the series.
I think ultimately I just want to see this go six or seven, because I think that constitutes a win for the Raptors, and it'll make for a lot less annoying offseason with everyone people calling to blow up the team or talking about the ceiling of the team and stuff like that. I think if you push the defending champions and the almost certain Eastern Conference champions this year to at least close to the brink, like six or seven, there'll be less of that talk this offseason, and there'll be more optimism to bringing the team back and, reasons to kind of perhaps go into the tax to kind of bring this team back. Because ultimately, I like this team a lot, and I like the way it's constructed, and I'm kind of annoyed by the fact that they're not going to be able to bring it back as is, simply because they'd have to go really far into the tax to do that. But it's like, we didn't get a fair shake at this, right? Like they acquired Ibaka and Tucker, and then the Lowry injury, we've only seen so many games of what this team can do when it's all put together like that. And even with the DeRozan injury this season, and Patterson had some injury problems and stuff. But I think, ultimately this is the best Raptors team ever in terms of just depth at every position and the way it's constructed. And I really would love to see it come back. So I think that if anything, I'm just kind of rooting for a long series to have a better opportunity to see what this team can do even again next year, because ultimately the interesting thing about this whole series and trying to preview it and in different things that I write for and preparing for this episode, I was looking at different things and trying to see what I could analyze in terms of how these teams match up. And the funny thing is you can't even take anything from the season series, because the two teams are so different. They played three of their four games in the first 6 weeks of the season, and then they played their last game on game 82 when the big three was sitting for the Cavs and DeRozan was out. And ultimately you can't take anything away from those games, because also Ibaka and Tucker were added at the deadline, so they weren't part of those original three games, and the Cavs have completely remade their bench. So
I think you can say the Raptors are undefeated when they bench DeRozan, and that might be a trend moving forward.
Ultimately, that's what I was getting at. Yeah. So if you're looking for the keys to this series, is really just bench DeRozan and see how it goes.
Right.
Yeah, perfect. Norm Powell, give him 30 shots a game. He's 100% from three since he got into the starting lineup.
Yeah, so you just put him in there, and just basically every Raptors shot should be a Norm Powell three, because, if recent history tells us anything, is that he's never going to miss again.
Yeah, he magically learned how to shoot.
Yeah. All right, so Justin, that's been great. We got our predictions in. Last thing that we like to do with, I'm going to say every guest, even though you're our first guest, is we want to ask you about a time that you fell down. So Do you have a good story for us about a time that you fell down?
I was trying to think of a story, and I was like, okay, maybe a time I slipped on ice or something. But I'm going to tell a story about the time that I decided to try to be athletic.
Okay.
Now, as I mentioned before, I'm 6'2", so I'm not that tall. But we were doing a scrimmage. I think I was in grade 12. No, I was in grade 11. And I decided on a fast break that I was going to try to dunk. And there was someone coming from the other side, and I was like, okay, I'm going to dunk on him. At the very least, I'm going to draw this foul. Now, the ball kind of hit the front of the rim, ended up hitting the backboard and going in. So at least I made the basket. But as I jumped up to try my dunk, I clipped my feet on his shoulder as he was one of our guards. And my feet went above my head, and I was kind of like, I was horizontally aligned with the floor, and I was like, this is going to hurt. And I slammed flat onto the ground and slid for a bit while my teammate turned and yelled, "Were you trying to dunk on me?" And it was at that moment that I decided to go with the Andre Miller game and stay closer to the ground.
That was a great story. That was, yeah, fantastic. Can you dunk? Have you ever dunked a ball?
I've dunked it a few times. I can't anymore. I just had knee surgery too in January, so I think any hopes of trying to be athletic again are out the window.
Could you dunk in high school, Dan?
No. I've been 230 pounds since I was in grade 9. So, and I'm 6. I'm also 6'2". But jumping was never part of my game. I play a lot of bully post-ups, and I can shoot okay.
Chuck right. Hayes.
Yeah, Chuck Hayes. Mo Spates is my game. I am
yes.
Mo Spates.
Mo Buckets.
Mo Buckets all the time. All right.
I saw this thing on Twitter the other day where everyone had to, or people were, you know, you were to describe your game, and your game is this person's game and this person's body. Yeah. And, you know, it's along the same lines of just being a husky gentleman. being like, yeah, my game is Oliver Miller and Oliver Miller's body. And Dan, I know you're old enough to get that, but
yes.
just that concept of, yeah, but all that said was just a reason for me, an excuse for me to say, because no one asked me, but I could dunk in high school. Wow. Before my, I also had a knee problem. Actually, my story of falling was all about ripping my knee in two. So before I got to be a husky gentleman, I actually could dunk, but yeah, I like, do miss those days.
I could grab the bottom of the mesh. That was like my that was my dunking. I had an adjustable net in the driveway.
I pretty much had to be convinced not to put it number one on my resume, because like could dunk in high school is like my one crowning achievement of my otherwise like completely like crappy high school existence.
You should get a tattoo.
Yeah, maybe I will.
Yeah. That'd be a great tattoo. Okay. All right, Justin, thanks so much for being with us. For those of you listening on Dash, we're going to take a short break here, and then we will come back with the second half, which will be a post-game one recap of the episode. Justin, can you tell the people who are listening to this in podcast form and on Dash where they can find you?
Make sure you subscribe and listen to the Chase Down podcast, also on Dash Radio, part of Almighty Baller Radio. You can also find me on Fear the Sword. That's where I get my Cavs writing done. And I will also shout out Press Basketball. We're doing some fun things there, so check us out there as well.
Fantastic. So I am Dan Grant at Slam and Danny G on Twitter.
And I am Russell Pedal at Rusty Pedal Bike on Twitter.
And I'm Cavzanada.
He is Cavzanada on Twitter. And Dash Radio people will be back in just a minute. But for the first half, get out the salami and cheese, mama, because the first half of this podcast is over. Whoa, whoa, whoa.